Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
All right, well, we've had a busy couple of days as we've recorded our next two podcasts. So if you look at a difference in clothing, if you're watching us on YouTube, then you will notice, yes, we are wearing a different outfit for this episode. You know, I've got to get the aesthetics out of the way, Bobby, as we do this for both mediums. We appreciate so many of you that are listening and downloading us, not only on the podcast on iTunes and iHeartMedia app, but also now checking us out on YouTube. So if you haven't seen us on YouTube, of course, go there and find us, the Boys and Girl Podcast. A couple of things have happened this week since we last talked. Obviously, the Cowboys released Cooper Rush. I think we sort of saw that one coming as they signed Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's got people a little excited by saying that he considers himself a starter. And I guess my only answer to that, Bobby, is of course he's a starter. He was a starter his whole career. And that's why it was so exciting, I think, for a lot of Cowboys fans that Andy Dalton was coming to Dallas. But I'm still getting no indication that Dak Prescott is not their guy, although I do find it interesting that they haven't had any meaningful conversation since they placed that exclusive franchise tag on Dak, something that I was told by a source of mine inside the building.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that obviously one thing that I assume everybody understands about the Dak Prescott negotiations is the fact that since that tag happened, you also had the death of Jace Prescott, Dak's brother. So I'm sure that's kind of complicated things. I'm sure there was no business going on during that time. In regards to Andy talking about, you know, he considers himself a starter, I do think that's normal. Kind of like you say, you know, I remember years ago, and maybe this isn't a great example because he did end up being the starter. I remember when Vinny Testaverde was brought in 2004 and people were like, oh, is he going to start over Quincy Carter? Vinny said, you know, to the media in training camp, said, you know, well, I think we all like to think we're the guy, but, you know, we're here to just do our jobs and you know, do whatever is asked of us. Of course, like a week later, Quincy Carter was cut and Vinny was the guy. But at the time, it was Vinny was making a good point, which is anybody who's a quarterback, you've got to have that mindset that you're always ready to go in. That's part of the job of the backup quarterback is you've got to be ready to come in and play. And so I think you need to have that starter's mindset. But also very clearly in that call with the media, you know, he said Dak's the starter, that you know, he knows Dak's the starter and that's where things stand. And I don't think anybody realistically, and we'll ask, you know, some of our guests coming up here about the idea of Andy Dalton potentially pushing Dak. But I don't think anybody realistically thinks that it's any sort of a threat to Dak Prescott's job. As you said, people in the building aren't giving you any sort of an indication is that if anything, maybe it was an added benefit. You getting a backup was the primary reason. Maybe it's an added benefit for something Jerry or Steven can say in negotiations is, you know, well, we just had to have ourselves prepared here. You're talking about not showing up to meetings. So we just, he's not here to replace you, but if you're not here, we got to have somebody to take the reps. Maybe that's some little push as an added benefit. But I think the primary benefit was clear. They needed a better backup quarterback, and I think they saw with the Philadelphia game last year when Dak was hurt, but you thought that a hurt Dak Prescott that couldn't use his throwing arm was better than Cooper Rush going out there. I think that that said quite a lot to them, and they realized, all right, we got to get this backup quarterback situation fixed again.
And with the exception of the year that Dak ended up becoming the franchise guy, it was Tony Romo, Kellen Moore, of course, Jamil Showers ahead on the depth chart, Dak Prescott. I can't remember them having this much depth at the quarterback position. So I think this is a good thing. I likened the signing of Andy Dalton sort of to having a more credible, more accomplished Mark Sanchez in the room that's really just helping him out. And also sort of a Teddy Bridgewater of sorts, a guy that, you know, could be a starter somewhere else, but is preparing himself for sort of that second half of his career. You know, Teddy Bridgewater, of course, had the gruesome injury with the Vikings, and now he's going to be the starter with Carolina and commanded top dollar for that, by the way. Andy could very well do that by being with the Cowboys. You know, anytime you're associated with the Cowboys, your market value just goes up infinitely.
Yeah.
So I think this was a good move for him. All right, so let's talk about the schedule release. You know, we've been talking about this pandemic, what the season's going to look like next year. as it was explained to me by people in the league, look, we're anticipating the game day experience is going to be different than what they're used to. It has to be during these uncertain times. The NFL and the clubs have been prepared and executed alternative plans during other seasons for weather events such as hurricanes, wildfires, excessive winter storms. And of course, they made adjustments in the wake of 9/11.
Yep.
And as for ticket holders, they're going to work through that too. NFL teams continuing those off-season activities. They're preparing to open and play the season as scheduled. And of course, that's why they did the schedule release. I love that Troy Vincent was asked, all right, are there alternate schedules? He said, not to his knowledge. But I think read between the lines, as we're sort of navigating this situation, yes, the goal is 100% to have a football season, but they've already pulled back on the London games, not doing that. So there's not going to be any travel to Mexico City or London. But the goal is to see this season through.
Yeah, and I think that, we talked about this a little bit after the draft, that it was nice because it created the water cooler again a little bit. It allowed people to return to a little bit of normalcy. And I think that the schedule release, not so much that, but I think the going ahead and releasing the schedule, whether it's optimistic or not, I mean, I don't think anybody can really project anything 4 months into the future right now. It's such a bizarre time. And so unexpected. It doesn't feel like it's been 2 months since the Rudy Gobert and NBA shutdown. That feels like forever ago. And I remember at the time when that happened that people felt like, man, this is going to be a pivotal moment, and Rudy Gobert is the permanent villain. And that's kind of changed because it became so rampant and so widespread that I think people realize, like, all right, he probably didn't trigger this spreading everywhere. And so I think that, given how much everything changes and our anticipation, I remember there was a point where I was talking to a couple sources who were saying that they didn't think the draft was going to happen until, like, they thought that was getting pushed back until May. And then that didn't happen. And so it's hard to project anything, but I think just the releasing the schedule, having dates in place, I think it gives people some hope, and it gives people a sense of, like I say, normalcy, like they've returned to a little bit of their normal lives. And I think that that's something that people need right now, is at least the hope that, we're going to see this. And I think the NFL is doing everything they can to make sure that it's seen. And I think if you look at the way the schedule is structured with, I believe they said Philadelphia and Washington are the only two division teams playing in week one, I think they've set up a schedule that allows them to, if they need to, shorten a schedule without impacting a lot of divisional games and playoff races. So I think it was measured and calculated, but I think that it was needed. And I do think that they appear optimistic that the season's going to be played.
But look, sports fans, I hope during this pandemic, when there was no sports, I hope you picked up a hobby or something. Maybe you're cooking HelloFresh. Maybe you've kicked the soccer ball with your kids a little bit more.
What I did, HelloFresh.
Diversify a little bit.
Exactly.
Just diversify a little bit,
Yeah, no, and I was all about HelloFresh. And I think especially for you and I, I hate, because I know there are so many people in such a bad spot right now. It's tough, and it's nothing anybody wants to see, and I don't want to minimize anybody's struggles. I feel like overall, though, this has been a chance for a lot of people to kind of reassess how they use their time and delegate things more, find out what's more important and what you want to prioritize. And hopefully when everything goes back to normal, people are going to be able to carry over some of those better habits that they've created while they've been inside. And we talked to those draft prospects leading up, and then they talked about how they had to get creative with, body weight workouts and different things like that since they didn't have gyms. So, a chance to better yourself and hopefully you're coming out the other side. I know Jane, for instance, has been busier now that she can't go anywhere than she's ever been before.
Yeah, but I love your optimism about how we're going to suddenly change our habits. It's going to probably be same Jane, same-ish.
No, when this is all done, I'm going to go back to doing everything that I did before the pandemic. But it's nice to, with the NFL schedule, we're trying to give people hope and let them think their good habits are going to carry over. And in reality, we're going to go back to eating, McDonald's 3 times a week And
I've broken that.
You've broken that now, but you even told Curtis Weaver in our interview that you went and got nuggets or had them delivered to you, McDonald's chicken nuggets. So I know that's not totally true. That's been in quarantine in the last month that you've eaten McDonald's.
Nothing escapes you, Bobby. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the schedule release as it pertains to the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. You know, some people weren't shocked by week one. Maybe I should have been more shocked. You know, we always sort of expect the Cowboys are going to play the Giants in week one, and how interesting would that have been having Jason Garrett and Mark Colombo on that opposing sideline.
And Cameron Fleming and Cooper Rush.
Of course, let's not forget them. Some of the Cowboy fans are going, who? instead, Jerry Jones, of course, had a big hand in getting
Stan Kroenke.
St. Louis Rams and Stan Kroenke over to L.A., and they open up the season on a big old stage, Sunday Night Football, against the Rams in the new SoFi Stadium. That one's going to be fun.
I'm really excited about that game. I'm excited about the potential for, and I think this was wise of the NFL schedule makers. I think they saw this a little bit, is that you see that San Francisco all of a sudden is a much better football team than I think the league anticipated with them going to the Super Bowl last year. And I think the NFL also recognizes Dallas should have been better than they were last year and is projecting a little bit that they'll be better. And so I do really like that they've set it up for week 15, you know, final couple games of the year there in December, Sunday Night Football, the 49ers and the Cowboys again, a little bit of nostalgia. There's actually a lot of, when you look at like just kind of the history of the Cowboys, they've got a lot of historic rivals coming for games this year. You've got Pittsburgh is coming to town, San Francisco. They're going to play Atlanta at home. That's a team they've played in the playoffs a number of times throughout their history. And another team that they've got a lot of long history with and some recent history too, the Rams, that they're going to open up with in that stadium. And so a lot of exciting matchups. The one that is interesting to me is, for people who know the CBS Fox breakdown, typically when CBS gets an NFC game, it's when they're playing an AFC opponent. But this year, they got a Cowboys-Giants game, and the Cowboys-Browns game is going over to Fox. But Cowboys-Giants, that'll be interesting. That's the first time they've played on CBS since the Emmitt Smith-separated shoulder game. That's the first time Cowboys and Giants have played each other on CBS.
MVB coming through with a Rain Man fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I should. I'm not going to say who, but when I texted that question to somebody else in the media last night, I got a text back that said, you would be the weird expletive that would ask that question.
It's who you are. Lean into it, Bobby.
I'm down. It's my favorite Taylor Tomlinson quote, positive or negative, Hall of Fame or Hall of Shame, as long as my picture's on the wall, just remember me.
You're in rare form today, my friend. Week 13, I think, was the interesting one. That's when I'm circling. That's when the Cowboys traveled to face Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. And, you know, we talked about Dez Bryant getting the looks from the Ravens last year. What if Dez Bryant is playing for the Ravens and then they face the Cowboys on Thursday Night Football? Would that not be a fun game?
Think about all the energy there. If you were to get Dez on the Ravens and you'd have Dak versus Lamar, and you'd get the reunion of Earl Thomas versus the Cowboys for the first time since he bowed to their sideline. And so
Mark Ingram, Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, that game would be wild. I could literally do a deep dive, as you know, into the Earl Thomas story, but I'm not going to go there because we have got a jam-packed show here today. Tony Casillas, who, of course, played for the Cowboys during their heyday in the 90s, a former OU alum. And then, of course, speaking of OU, we've got Lincoln Riley, the head coach for Oklahoma, talking about Sooner South and how interested were the Cowboys in him as the head coach. And then we've also got another big guest. He needs no introduction. He's one of my favorites. I could do a whole show with him. The playmaker, number 88, Michael Irvin, our second member of the 88 club in as many weeks.
Yeah.
And, as many shows.
And like Jane said, we've already kind of recorded some of this. So I think you're really going to enjoy Michael. Michael was in, you know, I don't want to say rare form because Michael is Michael. But he was in his you know, full Michael form. We got a good, you know, 30 minutes with him and lots of good takes on CeeDee Lamb and the defense and, you know, some of the lack of leadership that may have been in the locker room last year, and a great story that I took personal notes on about why you should send your teenage son away. Yeah, so good stuff there. Great stuff with Lincoln Riley, Tony Casillas. Got a jam-packed show today.
All right, we are now joined by one of my teammates at NFL Network, Michael Irvin. You can follow him on Twitter at MichaelIrvin88. Michael, we know you are so busy this offseason, especially as we troubleshoot not only the Skypes, the Zooms, the live TVUs that we're using in TV, but how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, you know, blessed. And it's so funny, Jane, you know, I was on just the other day with Dana White, because they're doing, you know, they're doing the fights coming up this weekend. And I said to him the same thing I said to Roger, thank you guys for being strong through it all. I know our health is most important, but people have to understand, we have physical health, but we have emotional and mental health too. And what we need are our live situations to help get through those situations, the motivation, the inspiration. We'll have UFC fights that we'll see somebody fight through something that helps us fight through what we're going through. We had the NFL draft. We see dreams come true that reminds us we all have dreams too. So the mental side helped with the physical side. That's why I lament those guys and I commend those guys for going forward to give us something to inspire us.
Well, I think of you because this is that typical that time of year where you thrive. People feed so much off of your energy. I know you feed off of their energy. What did you think of that ESPN duopoly? I had a lot of fun watching you guys do that together.
Yeah, it was everywhere. It was everywhere. And it was funny because it's going into it, because, you know, Jane, like, especially in the off seasons for me, it's about traveling and about speaking and all of that, trying to inspire people, motivate people. And I thought when we talked about doing a virtual draft, like, oh, my God, we're going to miss so many of the stories that are being shared. It's not just about how that kid and his skill set fit with this team and their philosophy. It's also you learn the backdrops, you learn the journeys, you learn the struggles that people have gone through to get to this point. Though we missed some of that because we were not able to put our hands on and touch and come in the studio and interview people like we usually do, we missed some of that. I thought we got some of it also by going into each everybody's homes to see, you know, at their homes to see some of the moms and the girlfriends and the mom like, I'm the one carried this joker for 9 months. I'm the one birthed and fed this joker. Get off him, girlfriend. That money's coming to me. You know, that's what you were seeing. And I was like, I mean, this is great, but I don't know if all of us African-Americans want America in our homes like this and seeing that like that. It was some funny stuff. It was great stuff for social media and fun stuff like that.
I love you so much. What did you think of CeeDee Lamb's situational awareness? Now, they came out and said his agent was FaceTiming him. I felt bad for his girl, Crimson Rose. But you got to love that it was the Cowboys and it happened like that.
Right. And right. And that's what I tried to share with him. You know, I said, hey, whatever you see, just magnify it by 20. And now you understand what it is with the Dallas Cowboys. Well, most people, maybe that's nothing. But now that you're a Cowboy, oh, that's everything. Because everything. If you're, I said to him this, Jane, come to think about it. I said, listen, man, understand this. I hear the rhetoric that people push out their mouth, but it's not reality. When you hear people say, well, you fell to 17. I said, man, listen, you don't fall to the Cowboys. God places you on the Cowboys. I said, this is a blessing that you have no idea about. If you really want to make your mark, I said, trust me, lose a little on the front end. I did. Lose a little on the front end, but you'll make it all up on the back end if you come and produce and have a great career. You know, I had an opportunity to get drafted 7th or something by Green Bay. Did not want to go there. Wanted to come to Dallas, you know. So I said to him, I said, Tim Brown, Sterling Sharp, all went before me. They didn't go to Dallas. You do not fall to Dallas. You are placed in Dallas, and take this placing as a great blessing, because it will be one of the most incredible careers and one of the most incredible experiences you ever had.
Well, and, you know, we talk about falling to 17. There was a linchpin of your 90s dynasties that fell to 17, because that's what Emmitt did. And a lot of people talk about Emmitt falling to 17 to the Cowboys, and, oh, they wanted James Francis. You know, they didn't even want Emmitt, but I think that turned out all right. So that'll probably be the case for CeeDee Lamb. And now, when you look at the Cowboys as compared to the end of last year to where they're at now, and they've lost a lot of guys. They've had a lot of turnover. They've brought in some others. You know, they're really hoping maybe Aldon Smith can come back, as well as Randy Gregory, and they draft CeeDee Lamb and Trayvon Diggs. Do you think they are, at this moment, a better team than they ended the season, or have they still not replaced everything that they've lost?
Well, to say better, I like the direction, and I like the possibility of them being better because of this. When you went into this offseason, we knew there were a lot of holes that needed to be filled on defense, and we lost some major components of that defense. You lost Robert Quinn to Chicago. You lost Byron Jones to Miami. You know, we're still wondering about some defensive linemen that we need up front and in the middle. So you said we got all of these holes to fill on defense to make this defense better than it was last year. And can we fill those holes, and can we make them better? That is something that we don't know, and we won't know until we actually get on the football field. So you can say, do we try to plug in all of these holes, or do we take this offense to another stratosphere? And that helps the defense as we fill in these holes and give them an opportunity to gel together. Picking CeeDee Lamb, and I know I talked to the Cowboys. Jane, I know you talked to everybody over there. They really wanted to go defensive on that first pick. They told me, they said, Michael, we're looking to secure shore up our secondary. We're certainly looking to get some more pressure from the defensive line. But they told me before the draft, But if our top guy on the board is there at 17, we will have to look at it. Their top guy was CeeDee Lamb. They told me that going into the draft. He was there. They took him. I liked it, because I say to people, if I can put up 35, 40 points every game, and now they have the ability to do what they were doing at the beginning of last year, all year long with CeeDee Lamb, you're putting up 35, 40 points. That is helping the defense. That's helping the defense have to go up against a one-dimensional offense that's trying to play catch-up, and that gives you a better chance at winning games, because you took an offense to another level instead of trying to take one offseason and fill all those holes on defense.
To steal one of your cliches, there were a couple of oh-my-god moments by Jerry Jones this offseason. We'll start with number one, anointing CeeDee Lamb his new 88. When we've all been talking about the possibility of Dez possibly getting another look from the Cowboys, and Jerry on draft night saying that he wanted CeeDee to wear that 88 because his friend in college at Arkansas wore it and passed away. We had Drew Pearson on this show ahead of you, and he talked about what comes with the 88 club and him having a conversation with you about what that meant. What did you think about that?
Well, first, you know, I try to reach out to all the young guys that are coming in. You know, I called Jerry Jeudy and all those things. And I was getting ready to call CeeDee. He called me, you know, which I'm impressed whenever you get a young man calling and seeking and searching for knowledge and understanding. He said, you know, I know you may have heard what I said about wearing 88, because he wanted to wear number 10. And I said, no. I said, hey, man, I had no issue with that. I told him, the best thing for you to do is to do whatever brings the dog out of you each and every crack of dawn. You know, for me, seeing that number 88, walking in the stadium, seeing all those guys on the Ring of Honor that built the star to what it was, I wanted to have that in front of me to make sure I remember who I am honoring by stepping on that field. It wasn't just about, oh, I'm going to make some money. No, it's about honoring the guys that have gone before me and made the Cowboys what it is. It's the same thing I always tell the guys when I'm speaking to them in Miami. This is not you. Somebody, we came before you and built this. And it's in your hands. Don't you mess it up. So Drew put the 88 in my hands, the Cowboys in my hands. So it was up to me not to mess it up. And that pushed me. That made me go every day. I said, you do whatever makes you go. And he said, well, I appreciate that, Michael. I want to make my own mark. Go make your own mark. But Jane, I said to him this, that man you talking about that drafted you, Jerry Jones, he don't become a billionaire without being very persuasive and convincing. He usually gets his way. So then a couple of days later when it came back out, oh, he is wearing 88. I called him and said, so you ran into that fella I was talking about. I let him tell the story about him and Jerry. But you know, I also told him this. I said, listen, man, this is a great opportunity. There's going to be so much great so many things expected from you when you put this number on your back. You know, go out and play hard, do what you have to do, you know, to become the greatest you want to be. And between me, you also said, think about it this way. Honestly, buddy, Jerry wants to win another Super Bowl before God calls him out of time to eternity. One day, that whole family, it'll be Steven and Charlotte, they'll be getting ready to write you a check for maybe $150 to $200 million. It'll make it a lot easier for them to write that check if they say he put that 88 on his back and gave our dad his last wish and got us to a Super Bowl. Trust me, they will stroke that pen happily. He said, you know what, Playmaker? Thanks for saying that, buddy. I got it. You know what I'm saying? So give a little now. You'll get a lot later. It'll all work out.
You know, it is fascinating because I've talked to Dez recently, and even he said, you know, look, he gets it. And if anything, he wants to help him market that brand that, you know, 88 was a number and there was obviously history with it, but 88 also took on a life of its own because of the branding in this new era and how you promote yourself. So I thought that was cool of Dez. But the other thing I wanted to talk to.
I heard too that Jed Dez is not getting the opportunity. I heard too. Let me tell you something too, because Jane, you know, you don't see that kind of connectivity and love from a player to an organization. I did. You know, people ask about Dez all the time. I was like, man, I just, you know, I can't believe it. Dez, you know, the pain of not of being released by the Cowboys is really what stopped him from going to any other team. Mm-hmm. He just held out hope that he was coming back to Dallas. And I was like, man, you know, you know, Jane, like I know, the Baltimore, Cleveland teams were calling me saying, Dez won't even come and visit. He didn't want to come and visit. He was hoping to get back to the Cowboys. You can't replace that kind of love, that kind of commitment to an organization. So it hurt me that killed his last opportunity to get back on the field or so perceived. You never know what will happen with injuries or anything like that. But now you got three receivers and you got Blake Jarwin. So that put Dez basically in the fifth position to catch a ball. And that's a long fall in the same helmet that you wore when you were number one.
I don't think it's going to happen with Dallas, but I think Dez is finally at peace with that. You know, I will tell you that I there are teams that are still interested. I think what's holding him back right now is the fact they can't get him in the building for the medicals. I've talked to teams. They can't get him in for the medicals, and they can't see him up close and personal right now. So there might be some movement, but I think the one thing with Dez is at least his head's in a different place. But I know you look at Dez sort of the same way I do, and I sort of commend him for the fact that he's still grinding it and going after it. And you can't knock a guy for trying. But yeah, to your point, it is unfortunate that thing played out the way it did. All right, so let's talk real quick, and then I'll let Bobby drop in here. The other oh my God moment, Andy Dalton falling to the Cowboys. You talk about falling versus placed. The pandemic sort of placed him with the Cowboys. What did you think of that move? And as I've been reporting, and I know you talked to a lot of people in the Cowboys organization too, I'm being told right now he is an insurance policy, that Dak is still their franchise guy. But how does this affect leverage for Dak at this point?
Well, I don't think it affects leverage for Dak at all. There's no way Jerry's putting this kind of resource, this kind of investment into an offense that he's going to turn over to Andy Dalton. And we don't even know how many good years Andy Dalton has left when he's stacked great young talent that can grow together for a while. You can have a hell of an offense running together for a while. You just locked up Zeke. You're about to lock up Dak. You just locked up Amari. You have two fantastic fantastic young receivers in Gallup and CeeDee Lamb. There's no way, you locked up Blake Jarwin. There's no way you turn that over to a guy that's as late in his career as Andy Dalton. You want that thing to simmer with the Dak Prescott and grow. We're not just talking about having success now. You're talking about having success later also, and that's exactly what you'll get. Now, that being said, it is, in some sense, it is a great insurance policy, not in the sense of a policy that ensures if Dak doesn't sign, you're good, but in a sense of a policy that says if Dak is not totally healthy, you're good. You cannot tell me, in all of my years of playing ball and having all kinds of shoulder dings and hits on my shoulder, that in game week 17 of last year against the Philadelphia Eagles, that maybe if you had Andy Dalton, Dak Prescott could have sat that game because he had that shoulder injury. And nobody talked about how that must have affected his game. You can't throw all week and you're going to go into a game. So maybe if you have an Andy Dalton, you can place him in and still win that game and give Dak Prescott back his job the next week going into the playoffs, give him a little more time to get healthy to play that game a little bit better. That's the kind of insurance policy I think Andy Dalton brings. Andy Dalton can win you a game or two in spot duties here and there. I don't think he'll make a run and get you deep into a playoffs or into a Super Bowl.
So I likened it a little bit to a Teddy Bridgewater signing. Is that fair?
That's too far. That's too far. That's too far. That's too far. Because Teddy Bridgewater gave you some upside. Had something catastrophic happen to Drew Brees, man, you move right on to Teddy Bridgewater and keep it moving. You see what I mean? You just say, hey, okay, we sorry, Drew Brees. We thank you for the great career. Teddy Bridgewater, we're going to extend your deal, and now you are our guy of the future. You know, so they had some now and some later with Teddy Bridgewater, if they wanted it. The Cowboys only have a now with Andy Dalton. There is no later. You know what I'm saying? Period.
I just didn't realize what a beehive Andy Dalton had. I mean, lately, people are coming out of the woodwork saying, well, Andy Dalton hasn't had these sort of weapons. Look what he could do. Ready to move on from Dak. And I'm like, guys, yeah,
that's what people do. That's what people do. That's what they do because, you know, they get the fighting for the organization. And I don't care who it is, they fight against the player. Let's be real. That's why I got to give some credit to Carolina and what they did. You know, Carolina knew, okay, do we put McCaffrey through this washer? Do we make him have to force our hand when we know we're going to have to do something and get him in? Or do we go ahead and step up and do the deal so we don't make the fan base mad at McCaffrey when now he's becoming the face of our franchise because we no longer have Cam Newton or Luke Kuechly? So they stepped up and made the deal so they didn't have to go through that fighting that made the fan base mad at the face of their franchise. That's where I do not applaud the Dallas Cowboys for making the fan base mad at the face of the franchise, who is Dak Prescott right now.
And to that point, I don't know that it's the Andy Dalton hive as much as the Romo hive that still has never accepted Dak, that small little group. I think they just lent their support to throw it to Andy Dalton this week. I don't think that was Andy's hive. I think that was Romo's and the anti-Dak hive.
They're still waiting to get any shot they can at Dak Prescott.
They are. That's always. I remember the Giants game his rookie year where he had been 12 weeks of pretty much perfect, and then they lost that Giants game. And I was like, I'm staying off social media tonight because Romo lovers have about 12 weeks built up that they've been waiting to release, and now they get the chance. I know that you know the organization really intimately, you know, people from staff all the way down to players, you know, a lot of folks there. And one of the things we heard after the season was, you know, maybe there was a lack of leadership at times, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And I know Mike Garofalo, that was one thing he reported near the end of the year, is that he was hearing that was maybe the disconnect between their talent versus the results, as they were hearing maybe there wasn't the right accountability all the time with some of the guys on defense. We already talked about, have they improved the roster? Do you think I guess two part. Do you think that was the issue last year? There may have been some leadership or some accountability issues in the locker room, and that was why there were issues on the field. And do you think that's been rectified? Do you think that there are the leaders in that locker room right now to move forward and be successful in 2020?
When you ask now, and just as I extrapolate from things that have happened, you know, not being in the locker room, somebody says there is a leadership issue and they point it to the defense, I can extrapolate and say, oh yeah, it had to be something there. Let me tell you what. Michael Bennett he had just got a pair of slippers and a cup of coffee. And he was the one jumping up in the locker room, making statements or trying to galvanize the defense. You just got your slippers and a cup of coffee. You just got here. Do you know what that would have been like? I could have seen. Say we're in the locker room and somebody had just gotten here and they try to step up. Charles Haley would say, sit your ass down. I got this. You know what I'm saying? We've been here and this is not acceptable. So to that, you try to extrapolate, say, now, whoa, why did it fall on the guy that just got here to step up and say stuff? Why is he that comfortable stepping up and saying stuff? So obviously he didn't see a clear head on that defense that's leading in some way that made him kind of shy away from stepping up. I say if Charles Haley or some of those guys, Ken Norton was in that locker room, the Deion Sanders, no way that guy, Michael Bennett, and I love Michael Bennett, would have stepped up. So absolutely, I think there's some issues there. Now, that's a lot about personality too. You know, when teams start gelling together, it's a lot about personality. It's a lot about how we spent any time together talking about where we're trying to go. And then those things show up on a football field. It's like, okay, if you are a leader of a football team, I can't spend a whole offseason not seeing you. You know, I need the leaders. I need to see them out here working the hardest. I need to know that how much this matters to them. I can't have my leader not talk to me all offseason and come to me in the fourth quarter saying, let's go. Because first of all, he's probably making more money. He's making $3 million. I'm making $600,000. And he comes to my face, let's go, you got to give me blood. I'm saying, get out of my face. You don't want making all the money. Go win the game. You know, unless you spend time with me in the offseason, you're building those rapports and that relationship, then you can talk to me. So absolutely, I believe there was a deficit in that direction with the Dallas Cowboys that I hope they fixed.
All right, before we let you go, because your era of Dallas Cowboys football was my favorite because there were so many dynamic personalities, the work ethic, the approach to what you guys do. You and I had the opportunity to sit down and talk for a Thuzio event in front of a group. And I learned so much about you. And I did one with DeMarcus Ware and found out some amazing stuff about him. One of my favorite stories is when you shipped your son off. When he was talking about living that life and wanting to play ball. I think the fans will love this because I think it speaks to who you are, because for all your success and how lighthearted your teammates talked about you both on and off the field, you put in the work and you tried to instill that in your kids. So if you could share the story of shipping your own son off.
Well, it's just like, you know, I talk with my son and I ask, you know, my son was here in Dallas and he played at Preston Wood High School in Dallas, and he was doing some good things. He was catching a lot of passes. I think he set the record for most passes in a game, like 22 passes in a game and all of that. And so I put him aside. I said, son, what is it you want to do in life? He said, Dad, what are you talking about? I said, well, what do you want to do? He said, I want to play in the NFL. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, okay. He said, I'll tell you what, go to your room and pack a bag. He said, what do you mean? I said, go to the room, pack a bag. He said, why? I said, you got to get out. So what do you mean? I said, son, listen, I said, playing in the NFL is not about a skill set. Everybody can run, everybody can jump, everybody can catch. You know, it comes down to matching the hunger of the dude across from you. You got to match that hunger each and every play, each and every day. I said, how can you match the hunger of those guys when they're playing for a life? They're playing to live in a house, to get a house, and you're living in this 20,000 square foot thing, mansion. I said, go pack your bags and you got to get out. I sent him to live with my nephew in Florida, who's probably the top trainer in Florida. And it was so funny because, you know, they live in this little, you know, small little apartment house. And he called me the first day. He said, "Dad, they have this TV with this big old thing on the back." I said, "Yeah, that's a regular TV." He said, "You got grip pliers. I got to turn it with a pliers." I said, "Yes." I said, "That's how. Now you are preparing yourself for life in the NFL." When he was here, I would come home. Man, he had girls all out in the out by the pool, all laying out by the hot tub. They had them all up in the theater room, in the theater watching movies. I said, "What the hell is this? You know how hard I had to work to get this. You can't have it now and expect to reach your full potential." I said, "Do you ever let anybody come by the house in Florida?" He said, "No, come on, Dad. Nobody's come. I'm not letting anybody come by here." I said, "Now you're working on a career. Because now you don't want people to see you live like that. So you'll work hard to make sure you get your own. Now things are right." My bishop and I always talk about this. You know, we love our kids as well as we should. But sometimes we always want to give them better than we had. And sometimes the best thing we can give them, Jane, is our struggle, because that's what made us who we are. And we are keeping that away from them. So I wanted to make sure best I can, I could give him my struggle.
Let's be honest, though, Michael, you're not going to make that granddaughter of your struggle. I see she's got you just wrapped around your little
finger.
Girls are different. I see.
That is totally different.
I'm sitting here. I'm taking my notes for my own teenage son. So I know, ship him off. Michael Irvin says, ship him.
You know,
that's good.
I told my boy, I said, "Listen, man, I told my boys, I said, when you guys leave, Michael has never come back home. I shipped him off when he was in the 10th grade. And he has never come. He doesn't even come home to visit. You know, we have to force him to come home." So that's great. I say it's working. You know, it's working. But I told my boys, I said, "Once I ship you out, don't come back. I'm taking one of those cement guns and I'm filling your room in. It's gone. My girls. Your room will always
girls be. Never leaving. The girls are never. Yeah.
Right. You always got a room. You always got a pot of gold in my rainbow. I got you some money sitting aside. I would never let any dude tell you, you got to do this, and this, or he ain't paying you. You come on home. Daddy got you, baby. You ain't got to let no dude force you nothing. Daddy gonna take care of his girls forever. That's just what that is.
I've missed you, Michael. The social distancing, us not doing TV together has been tough. I appreciate you doing this Zoom with us and jumping on the podcast. We know you're a busy man. We've got schedule release this week. Thank you for joining the show.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Thanks for having fun.
Joining us now is former Dallas Cowboys defensive tackle and former OU great, Tony Casillas. You can follow him on Twitter at TC Casillas or on Instagram on Instagram at Tony Casillas. Tony, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I was great until I saw your Texas hoodie.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm talking to two Longhorns, but that's okay. My son actually graduated from Texas, so I had to hear for the last 5 years. And I always remember this. Texas is an academic school, Jane.
Wait, I cannot believe you actually allowed that. You allowed your son to go to Texas? How did I not know that?
I didn't allow. My wife allowed it.
Happy.
No, I will give a plug. Texas is actually, you have to be very smart to get in there. And I'm talking to probably some over-educated people yourselves compared to, I'm not going to discard my degree from Oklahoma, but you have to be smart to be getting that school. So I have no problem. He's doing well now. He's out. So more power to it's just part of the whole, like, you know. So each other,
Tony, look, full disclosure, Tony, I flunked out of summer school, which was the only way I was going to get in. And then I went to Austin Community College for a year. And then I was denied journalism school three times. So don't worry.
I think your career turned out pretty nicely for you, Jane.
We're all good. Thanks, Tony.
You know, I did the same thing with Neville Gallimore, not on purpose. But when we interviewed Neville Gallimore, I was wearing the Texas shirt. And, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about the 88 club, but, you know, we haven't talked about the 75 club. Are we getting that started now? Because you got you and Neville, that's the two OU alum defensive tackles wearing 75. Is that the next legacy we're getting going?
Well, you know, it's not going to get all the glamour because of, you know, this, it's not a sensational position. It's not romance like 88 and CeeDee Lamb. But yeah, I think we should, because we need to connect that, you know, 75, not only 75, but we need a defensive lineman to represent in this generation. So I think it's a great way to start the, you know, the whole culture of that great number. So I'm all for that.
You know, I'm always fascinated with how these guys come to get their numbers. How did yours come to be 75?
Well, that's a great question, because I wanted 92 when I was number 92 at Oklahoma. So I wanted my 92 number when I went to Atlanta back in 1986 when I was a drafted second player, in the draft. And that's been a long time. But so I got there and I said, look, I want number 92. And they said, well, you can't wear number 92. I'm like, what? It wasn't like I had to buy it from someone, Jane. There was no one like actually wearing it. I said, well, I mean, what's the deal? I mean, I didn't want 92. Well, you can't. It's already allocated. It's, you know, you have to have something in the 70s. Well, I thought about one of the best players, defensive lineman in the league, and that was Howie Long. And I said, I'm going to go with 75. So let it be known that's the reason why I picked 75, because they wouldn't give it to me because of Howie Long, the great 75 with the rip technique. So I wanted to be like Howie.
That's awesome. You know, I actually got into journalism because of Howie, watching Sundays, him and Jimmy Johnson with my dad, the Cowboys. I mean, I sort of fangirl every time I see Howie Long. So that's a great story.
You know, when you look at the Cowboys locker room that you played in, you were here from 91 to 93 and then returned in 96. When you look at the structure of those locker rooms that you were in, a lot of people talked about how there was a lot of drama there and you know, there was a lot of sideshows and potential distractions, but there was always chemistry and there was always a good nucleus and everybody worked well together. One of the criticisms that Dallas's defense got last year after playing really well in 2018 and kind of falling apart in 2019, some of the things we've heard are there may have just been some leadership and some chemistry issues. And so when it comes down to it, maybe they didn't have some distractions and things like that, but they were lacking that cohesiveness, I guess. How important is it, do you think, coming from a team that did have some distractions, maybe technically off the field, but still were a cohesive unit? How important do you think that leadership aspect is on defense and holding guys accountable for their assignments and what they're doing on the field?
Well, Bobby, first and foremost, you got to have the talent. You have to have the ability. You have to have a really good, players make a great offensive and defensively. We had that. I mean, it's a different era. We had so much depth of the defensive line. And so we were able to compartmentalize that. I mean, we did things, and I always, you know, the social media, when you look at your phone and there's instant, electronic media out there, where you're at and what you're doing. I don't know how well we would have done back then, but we were able to compartmentalize how good we were because we paid attention to detail. And it was just a different type. You know, for one, we had a coach that just wouldn't let us, rest on the laurels. I mean, it didn't matter how great we were. He reminded me how bad we were and how bad we could become if we didn't take care of business. I look at this team, it was a step back without a doubt. I mean, you look at last year. I mean, there was so much expectation coming off the year before, and then this really, really was an issue with them. When you sign someone like DeMarcus Lawrence who's making all this money, there's a high expectation. But I think ultimately they gave up a lot of big plays, and I think now it's different because you were the star. And my experience of being able to be on those winning teams is that there's a brand there, and sometimes you get caught up in the brand and you really are not actually doing it on the field, which represents what how well that you're being admired and, how many followers you have on Instagram. I think sometimes that takes over. So I think that's the process now. I think on the field, everything that you do as far as getting the job done and being really well, that's going to take care of us. You take care of that and the other thing will follow. And that's exactly what happened to us. We all were able to capitalize on how great we're on the field, let alone, all the things that we like to do and have fun. We were just able to compartmentalize it.
What did you think of the Hot Boys brand?
I really don't. I'm not a proponent of it. I think the whole deal with San Francisco there was this copyright infringement and everything. I think you can be as big as your brand if you're producing, And, you know, and I think, you know, I follow DeMarcus Lawrence. I think they do a lot of great things. I know they're doing things now, you know, during the corona, this pandemic, and providing meals and doing great things. But, I mean, when you're arguing over a brand and the other team is in San Francisco, is in the Super Bowl, and you're arguing over a brand because you want to capitalize it, I really don't think you have much say in the whole copywriting. I mean, I get it. But to me, I think it gets sidetracked. You really, again, and we just talked about, you know this, Jane and Bobby, that now it's so like how big you are, you know, your how many followers you have and what pictures you have and how people, you know, realistically want to be like you, but they can't because, for one, they're not going to be a professional athlete. Two, they're probably never going to be able to have the money that you have. So I think that gets lost in translation. I don't like that. I think, again, you produce on the field, I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, we've seen that. And I think that the people realize everyone to go around. And if they realize that, then they wouldn't get lost and worried about their brand and just really actually producing on the field.
It is interesting, not to give too much away, but I know there are some guys that are immediately after games, they want their pictures. What action shots do you have of us for us to put on our Instagram? And then you look at some of the other guys, I consider them sort of the silent killers on the team. They don't really have that sort of stuff on there. So I do agree with you. I've seen it. These guys come in as rookies and, you know, Jason Garrett always made them work for the star and then they get the star, but you do see this transformation. Do you think Mike McCarthy is going to change that a little bit?
First of all, I don't want to sound like this old man, like, you know.
Well, it's easy to call you a boomer here.
Well, I'm an old man, but I don't want the perception because I understand the generation. You know, I'm on social media. I mean, I'm an older – I mean, we all know that that's to be plugged in. You got to have that. But I've never liked the whole – and, again, this probably sounds old school about, you know, exchanging jerseys after the game. You watch The Last Dance. I mean, I understand the whole Isaiah Thomas not wanting to shake hands with him. I mean, it probably was the wrong thing to do. But that's kind of the vibe that I'd have after we got our asses kicked by the other team. So, you know, Mike McCarthy, I don't know. I think that we all know that it's a little different the way they handle players at the star. And I think that's one thing that's great about that. And I think sometimes maybe – you have to cost yourself about that because you may be able to get away from more with the star because that's the brand. And I think players, without having to go out on the field and produce, are taking advantage of that. And I think there's a little resentment from some of the former players that have been there that once won championships that these guys haven't earned anything. And yet, you know, they're instant here. Now it's all about, let's get you, you know, the followers on Twitter and let's get you a brand on Instagram. That gets lost in everything. I think Mike McCarthy is a tremendous coach. I've been a big admirer of him. I love what he did with Green Bay, and I think he's going to be good for this team. And I think we've already seen a lot of some of the – maybe people aren't giving as much credit, but we've already seen the changes that he's made and some of the players he's picked and the guys that he's drafted. I think that's definitely a thumbprint of Mike McCarthy, without a doubt.
Now, you mentioned the word resentment and that maybe there's a little bit of resentment from the older guys. You guys haven't earned this. Speaking of that term resentment, I know that's been a word that's been brought up this offseason in terms of if Dak Prescott's not going to take part in some of these virtual OTAs and be in these meetings while he's trying to get a contract done, would there potentially be any locker room resentment? Do you think that there's any chance guys in the locker room would – have ill feelings towards Dak's mode of trying to negotiate this and maybe not participating in some of these voluntary activities, if that is the case? Or do you think that guys in that locker room look at it as, hey, you're trying to get your money, go get your money?
Well, I think it's so different now, the way with this whole pandemic, you know, guys can't go out to the facility. They can't, you know, there's no OTAs, there's no organized workouts. I mean, it's just totally just so weird to be able to have to go through that. I think Andy Dalton was just an unbelievable opportunity for the Cowboys. I think Andy Dalton is a much better security blanket insurance policy than someone like Cooper Rush. And we all know this. We all know that ultimately Dak Prescott is going to get signed a deal. I do think this, though. I think that there is a thought process with Jerry Jones and the organization that, look, you know, if this is this goes longer than we think, and we don't know even what the landscape of football is going to be like in September, that we sleep better at night knowing that we have someone like Andy Dalton that can be our starting quarterback. As far as players, look, I think it's a business. Everyone gets what they need to get. Dak needs to get paid. But you know what? There's a difference between some guy asking for $10 million and a guy asking for $40 million. That's a lot. That's leaps and bounds. So, I mean, whether he gets 33 or 35 or gets a five-year deal, I mean, when you start talking about those numbers, I mean, look, I mean, it's kind of out of the stratosphere when you got some dude making, you know, the minimum salary, and you got even a guy making $10 million. It's like, you know, I can't even fathom that. So he needs to get what he can. But I think ultimately, I think now, I mean, with Andy Dalton, it makes it a little easier to maybe think, you know, sit across that table with Dak Prescott and say, well, hey, this is what we're going to offer you. Well, you know, think about it. And, you know, if we don't get it done, then we got an insurance policy.
It is tricky. And I want to ask you, you know, as a player, how do you get into those conversations with your agent wanting to, you've got an agent telling you this is your best time to seize, make the money that you deserve. This contract's important for you. It's important for your security. But also, as you said, there's an optics even more so than when you were playing about what you're asking and how it looks to your teammates in the locker room.
Well, I think you know that there's an unwritten rule. A quarterback's going to be the highest paid player. And you're like, okay, well, I'd love to be a quarterback, but I'm not. And once you realize what a quarterback goes through, you probably don't want to, you know, be a quarterback because there's so much that goes along with that. You know, there's a two side to that, Jane. I mean, an agent's trying to get as much as he can because whatever his percentage is, that just means more that he's going to. I mean, so there's a twofold thing in this, but I think ultimately there's a slot where these quarterbacks and any player makes. And I mean, ultimately you try to just try to milk whatever you can on the, you know, across the table out of each other. And then after everything is kind of settled, you're like, okay, this is as far as I'm going to go. And then finally, it just comes down to the player. It's like, you know, look, I'm good. You know, if we're only $1 million apart, hey, or $2 million or whatever that may be, you know, you have that bottom number. So I think it's, you know, for players, it's hard to sit there and like, gosh, I'm passing up that much money. But ultimately, you're going to get it. I think that's the you get a false sense of security, but you know underlying that it's going to happen. But it's hard. It's a tough position to be in.
Call me optimistic. I just think that this thing's going to get done because we saw the DeMarcus Lawrence thing get contentious. Ezekiel Elliott happens literally at the last minute. He fell asleep and they had to call him multiple times to wake him up and get him to training camp there in Dallas. Now, I will say they didn't have a guy behind DeMarcus Lawrence that they could plug and play, or for that matter, really Ezekiel Elliott, despite the fact they had Tony Pollard and Alfred Moore. So I think it's interesting, this little cat and mouse game that these two are playing as we get closer to July 15th. And as you said, with this pandemic and, you know, with the not having that touch point of having him, you know, in the building or around his teammates, it is, you know, last summer when people asked him about it, I was like, oh, this thing's getting done. And it's fascinating to me that since the exclusive tag was put on, I was told just the other day, they haven't had any meaningful conversations with his camp. So interesting stuff.
Well, and look, I mean, it'd be a lot different if you actually physically could, you know, not show up at the Star or whatever facility you are. But since you are, you know, the players aren't able to go to the facility. So it's a little different anyway. So I think it'd be a little odd to not be able to physically be there around your teammates. But, I mean, Dak's going to be fine. He's a smart dude. I mean, he'll grasp onto Mike McCarthy's system. He'll be fine. And look, I think with the players like CeeDee Lamb and some of the people they have coming back, I mean, they have a lot of opportunity. And I think it's very exciting. I think you know, for me, if I was Jerry, under the circumstances of this being a new regime, a new offense, so to speak, I would try to have more of a sense of urgency to get the deal done because I'm excited about a new opportunity. I mean, we all talk about Jason Garrett's stale offense and, you know, what they tried to do. And really was a standstill. So now it's just like, look, it's new, man. It's like getting a new car, right? So, you know, you're getting used to all the buttons and everything. You get a fancy car and it goes fast. I mean, this is opportunity. So to me, that would be the only incentive for me to try to get something done so we can all get, you know, everyone back together whenever that may be. We just don't know, right?
Now, briefly, just here as we're wrapping up, and I know we mentioned the Mike McCarthy thing, and a lot of people may not realize that. I know you had about a cup of coffee, just a little bit of off-season time in Kansas City. Yeah. And Mike McCarthy was there at that time as an offensive quality control coach. Do you remember him at all?
No, I don't. You know, my deal when I was in Kansas City was kind of weird because I signed a contract and I went and got a second opinion on a medical issue. And Marty Sottheimer was a coach at that time. And I just didn't really feel comfortable, going to training camp. But I didn't even know that Mike McCarthy, I mean, he was probably thin back then. I mean, a skinny dude, man. Not that he is now, but I mean, he was just a lot younger. So I don't remember that. But that's pretty interesting. Call it control.
Speaking of quality control, we talk about a lot of people having to control Michael Irvin, both on the field and off of it during his playing time, something he's very candid about. Your favorite story about Michael during your playing time?
Oh, God, there's a lot of them. I'm trying to think. I think the best story was on the way back from we got beat by Washington. And it was a Monday night game. And we all know that Jimmy hates to lose, right? I mean, he just doesn't. He's like, he can't think realistically that you should lose, all right? So we lost the game on the way back, and Michael Irvin, the players sit in the back of the plane, and the players are in the coaches and all the staff are in the front of the media. So we're sitting back there. We're playing. And it's just you don't want to talk because Jimmy's up, he's pissed. So he's sitting up in the front. And so next thing you know, we see Jimmy walking back to the back of the plane, and Michael Irvin, and I think it was Frank Cornish, we're playing cards. And so Jimmy starts walking back, and you know how you see somebody, like you just see the boss or someone, your teacher, you're quiet. So we all get quiet. So Frank Cornish and Michael Irvin were playing cards, and so we all get quiet. And so next thing you know it, Jimmy, Frank Cornish, God bless him, he passed away a few years ago. He's always laughing, right? So he's looking down, he's laughing, they're playing cards, and Jimmy looks up, and Jimmy goes, "What the hell are you laughing at, Frank? We just got our asses kicked by the Redskins." And he looks at him, and he goes, "I'll deal with you tomorrow." And Michael Irvin grabs his arm, right, and says, "Man, that's okay. He won't cut you." And so that was a good story. And Michael, man, you know, the one thing of Michael is that his bravado, I mean, that's the way he always is. I mean, when he's on, he's a broadcaster, and his energy is always at a high level. But the one thing I always remember with him, and you always talk about this, you always talk about the comparison with the 88s, when he demanded the ball, you know, it was just sincere. It wasn't like screaming or anything like that, because he wanted the ball. He wanted Troy to throw in the ball because he would make plays. And what I remember about him, he followed through. A lot of guys can't say that. And that's one thing I always remember about Michael. I mean, he was always the energetic, the always passionate guy. If we needed a spark, I mean, you know, during training camp or anything, that dude right there would always kind of, he'd make us laugh or just do something where we'd just shake our head and like, okay, we're good.
Well, before I let you go, I lied to you because when I get guys, you know, from that era, that was obviously the team I grew up on. And so I football life with Troy Aikman was one of my absolute favorite ones that's ever come out.
So don't tell me you're pretty young. So what don't even mention it.
I'm not that young, but I was in high school during one of the parades. So what?
Oh, okay. That's
yeah. Okay, I'm not that young.
No, I don't feel that bad now.
So favorite story about Tony before we let you go. Troy, rather.
Oh, Troy. Man, you know what? He was such a fierce competitor. And when I say this, I don't mean it in a negative way. He was constructive. He was stoically, if that's a word, constructive. He was like that, but in a way where he wanted people to respect him because that's the way he handled his position, his leadership role. But we'd have two men in on a Friday, right? And we'd go through, just kind of like a walkthrough, not a walkthrough, but it was, we had pads every day back in those days. So Friday, we had no pads, and we're like, this is great. So we had a 2 minute at the very end, and it was just something very, you go through the 10 minute drill. But every time someone would mess up, you'd hear so many F-bombs from Troy Aikman that everybody just shattered the whole field. And when Troy spoke, when he got pissed off like that, everyone listened. And we'd start back a drill, and it was his perfection. So I always remember that. That dude was just he was such a leader, and he wanted perfection, especially on a Friday when a lot of us went out there and thinking, this is kind of a blow-off day. But the execution 2 minute drill, just listen to him, rattle off a couple of F-bombs, was kind of, we knew we were ready.
It's so funny. DeMarco Murray once told me that Jason Garrett demanded a lot of his players at practice. And when you juxtapose people talking about Troy and Jimmy at practice, even though DeMarco told me that, I just have a hard time believing it was anywhere close to that sort of intensity. And I think that's Jason, sort of intensity. Exactly. Yes.
Jason, I think that was his word of preference too. I've been around Jason, and you don't see, that's the thing about it. You don't see behind the curtain, but man, the preparation part of it, hey, it's serious business. And that's what makes those guys such great leaders. I mean, all of them, because they don't let that stuff pass by. Like, let's start it again. We'll perfect it, and then we'll be ready for the weekend.
Well, you are always so awesome to have on. I really appreciate you coming on. And if you're interested, we'd love to have you back.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me. Even if you guys are a couple Longhorns, I still love you.
We appreciate
Thanks,
Tony. All right, we are now joined by OU head coach Lincoln Riley. A little uncomfortable for Bobby and I as a Longhorn alumna myself and Bobby a Longhorn fan, but I got to tell you, you got to give credit where credit is due. How about the Cowboys organization becoming a bit of Sooner South for you? What is it that you're doing with just your recruiting and these guys that's getting them so many looks in the league right now, coach?
Oh, it's the efforts of a lot of people. We've got a great setup. We've been able to recruit some outstanding players. We've got a development team kind of all around, strength and conditioning, nutrition, football, life outside of football, academics, that's really pushed these guys. And we've been lucky to have some great ones that have been coveted by a lot of people. And then I think the other thing that people are enjoy about our players is they know our guys have played on the biggest stages. They've played in major games. They've played in championship games. They've played in playoff games, huge venues, great opponents. So, I think that's a big part of it. And then I also look at, kind of the history of Oklahoma players. And, a lot of people want to focus on how many players that you have drafted or opportunities in the NFL. And that's certainly important. I don't want to discount that, but also of your players that get those opportunities, how many are, like making it, are becoming successful. And I think when you study the history of Oklahoma, both, past and current, that's been a pretty good batting percentage. And so I think our guys are getting some great opportunities, and I think you'll have another class this year that'll be ready to take advantage of those.
CeeDee Lamb is obviously one of those, and one of these guys that Cowboys fans are most interested in. And I know a lot of people have seen just some of the glowing things you've said about CD during his career and some of the positive things. And everybody knows, what a great player he is and his skill set. But as somebody who has been with him the last few years, what would you say is the thing CD still most needs to work on as he enters the league? What would you say is the area he can sharpen the most now that he's heading to the NFL?
Well, he's a versatile player, and I think probably will be just adjusting to some different coverages, to some of the just consistently better, DBs that he's going to see week in and week out. He's one of those guys. I don't know that there's one just like glaring weakness in his game, which is exciting, but I mean, he's going to need to continue to improve on all parts. I know that's kind of a boring answer, but it's the truth. The guy can do it all well, but he's still got a lot of room to grow. And I think if you look at his time here from when he came in as a true freshman, to the way he's improved his game, improved his body, his speed. I mean, every part of him has gotten better. And the reason for that is he's been a great practice player. He's worked hard. He's allowed us to continue to coach him very, very hard here, which we do, even when he's had success. And so I think if he keeps that attitude, which I fully believe that he will, and stays hungry, this guy's going to continue to get better and better. And I don't see any reason why he can't be one of the elite receivers in that league.
Is there something that stands out for you about your time with CeeDee Lamb when you thought to yourself as a head coach, not only is this kid going to make it in the NFL, but this kid's special?
You know, I thought he had a chance to be special from, honestly, the day we started recruiting him. I went out to watch him at Foster High School down there in Southwest Houston, and watched him do a 7-on-7 in between his junior and senior football seasons. And I thought at that point he was good enough to play for us then, which, you know, that's you know, saying something for somebody still that young. And I just believed in our talks even before he got on campus, even before he signed with us, with him, were, you know, if you'll trust us, if you'll continue to improve, if you'll continue to stay humble with the start that you have and the ability you have, this could really be something special. And I just give the kid credit. You know, so many people in this day and age, whether it's in football, any other walk of life, when they have success, they tend to stop wanting to listen to people or wanting to take, you know, criticism or wanting to be pushed. And this kid kept that. And I think that's why he's gotten better. It's been fun to see, you know, kind of that journey from the very beginning. You know, I think that's the most exciting thing about him right now. If you're a Cowboys fan, is you got a very talented player that I think is good enough to help you right now, but, you know, has always been extremely hungry to get better. And I think that's going to continue.
A lot of people around the league right now are talking about, you know, you've got to have exciting passing concepts in the NFL now, you know, and they usually mention Sean McVay, you, Joe Brady, and they say, you know, you need to be doing creative things like those guys are doing. The running game is not the way you win anymore. I'm just curious from your perspective, since so many people think so highly of what you do with offensive concepts, what role do you think the running game should play in modern football, both at the collegiate and the NFL level?
Oh, I believe a huge part. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at us here, I think the lowest we finished in rushing in all the years we've been here, I think, is maybe like 25th, 26th, 27th, somewhere in there. I mean, we've really committed to it, and it's made our passing game stronger. It's certainly helped our quarterbacks. I think it makes you much tougher to defend. I've also been in places too where, you know, maybe because you didn't have the best O-lineman or best running backs, or you were overmatched, where you had to throw to win. And so I do think certainly you want to get to a point where you can run the football. I mean, there's no question about it, but at the end of the day, you have what you have, and you've got to find a way to make that work. You have to find a way to move the ball regardless. So, you know, do you have to have one? No, but certainly having a good running game makes everything a hell of a lot easier.
Switching over to defense, we had Neville Gallimore on our show just a week ago. He's a really impressive kid. And, of course, CeeDee Lamb getting a teammate on this Cowboys roster. What stood out for you about Neville, and what can fans expect from him?
Neville's such a cool story. You know, I mean, you know, coming from Canada, you know, I've compared it both doing some interviews and even, you know, talking to GMs, coaches, all that leading up to the draft process. When Neville got here, it was almost like bringing an eighth grader in terms of how much exposure he had actually had to football. He was very raw. He was a smart kid. He always worked hard, but he was so far behind bringing in, you know, the normal player that we would, in terms of just what he knew about the game and how much exposure he had to it. And so it was a kind of a constant process. His first couple of years, his athleticism always flashed. His effort always flashed. He's always been very strong in the weight room. I mean, he had the tools, and he had some bright moments those first 2 years on the field. But then these last two, he took it to another level. He was outright dominant. He did it in a brand new defensive system for us this year, was able to learn that, process it, and easily have his best year. So you're getting a quality human being. You're getting a very explosive guy that'll leave it all on the field. You're getting an interior defensive lineman that can win one-on-one in pass rush situations, which obviously is critical at any level of football. And so, yeah, I think his best football is ahead of him. I really do, just kind of where he started and because of the work ethic that this kid has. So he'll become a fan favorite. They'll love the way he plays, love the way he communicates, and he's just a neat human being.
We became fans of him really quick, didn't we, Bobby?
Oh, yeah. No, he was great, and he was a lot of fun. And he took in good nature the Texas shirt I forgot that I had on when we started the interview. But, you know,
Bobby's kind of like Charlie Brown. There's only a couple of outfits
exactly.
He wears during the week, and it just so happens that he's got two Longhorn sweatshirts. And we had Tony Casillas on yesterday. He, of course, was wearing it. So he's not trolling OU. It's just – he's like Charlie Brown. He only has so many shirts that he wears to work.
Exactly.
Well, luckily for Bobby, we timed it out better today.
there you go. You get the gray today. Now we are, even though we are Cowboys focused, we do get a lot of Eagles listeners just from the fact that, you know, they're checking in on the division rival. And I know one of the, I think really, you know, kind of unfortunate, because I know from talking to people what a good guy he is, some of the unfortunate reactions is some of the hate that streamed down on social media for the Jalen Hurts pick. And I know that you know what kind of a player he can be. For anybody listening who may be an Eagles fan, why should they not be upset about Jalen Hurts going to Philadelphia?
Oh, man, there's a lot of reasons. You know, for I know the bad blood between that rivalry, but those the brain trust there in Philadelphia the last few years has got a Lombardi trophy and a lot of wins, a lot of success. Those guys know what they're doing, and they were very, very thorough in their evaluation of Jalen, and they've got a plan. You know, they've got one of the best offensive coaches in football, and Doug Peterson. They've got a great GM. They know what they're doing, and that position obviously is so critical in that league. And then to have a guy like Jalen that you can come in, that can develop, that can already do so many things day one, that's an unbelievable presence in the locker room, which I, you know, people talk about that, but I don't know that everybody really understands how important that is. And Jalen just got that vibe about him. He's just a winner, and he's going to make people around him better. So it'll be fun to see how they use him. I think it makes it all the sense in the world. I mean, you just, you know, you think about all the money, time, effort, all invested into NFL seasons. And then, you know, if you're the one snap happens and your main quarterback goes down and you've got no answer after that, I mean, you know, you're one snap away always. And so I love the pick. I love the fit for Jalen. I know they're very excited to get him. And I think the Philadelphia fans, as they get to know him, see what kind of worker he is, see how he performs on Sundays, I think they'll love him as well.
You know, I've covered the Cowboys on and off since 2004, and so I've gotten to listen to a lot of Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones over the year, and when I hear you just talk football, the importance of the running back, that backup quarterback position, and even the way that you just go down some of the memory lane on your players and the way you speak of them, I think that if you got in a room with Stephen or Jerry, I could see how you might enamor them a bit. So the biggest question for a lot of Cowboys fans, how interested were they in you as the head coach?
Oh, you know, I stay away from those things. You know, that's those are a lightning rod, as you guys know, as much as anybody. You know, listen, they're one of the elite organizations. They do a absolutely tremendous job. You know, it's been fun, you know, getting to be here close to them and be around them a little bit. But I'm also lucky that, you know, I've probably got the best college job in America and a place that we're very happy. So, you know, I think we'll leave it at that.
I also wanted to ask you about DeMarco Murray. You know, you talked about the emphasis on the running game. What's having a guy like DeMarco Murray like in your building? Obviously, a very proud Sooner. I got to think it helps with recruiting, but also to have his skill set in there working with some of your young guys.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, he's just, as you know, he's just a really neat individual. You know, he's done so much already in his life at such a young age, and obviously has kind of been tremendous at everything he's done. He's been very, you know, very impactful with our current players. Just to have a guy that has kind of led that life that a lot of these guys would love to emulate. He obviously, you know, being able to do it at Oklahoma and relate so much back to our guys. But then also he's pretty wise beyond his years. You know, you could tell the guy, like a lot of players think they can just leave the field and immediately coach. And they've I've been a player, I've been in it, I've seen it all. And a lot of guys get in it, and you could tell when they were as a player, like they had blinders on. They had no idea a lot of things were going on around him. And DeMarco, as you visit with him, you can tell this guy always paid attention. He was always learning, very aware of what was happening. And so he's progressed just like he did as an announcer and just like he did as a player. He's progressed very quickly as a coach and has a great knowledge, great understanding of what we want to do. He's going to be a tremendous recruiter. So he was a great hire. We're thrilled to have him.
Well, you've helped make Texas OU great again. And like I said, I know that you are incredibly busy. You guys are dealing with the uncertainty of a football season, as so many are. I know here at the NFL Network, we talked about it last night. We are expecting the season to go full board. But, you know, we sort of prepare ourselves, as anyone does, for you know, catastrophic events, whether that be a hurricane, tornado damage, you name it. So that's kind of how we're looking at the season. So I hope to see you guys on the field. And again, thank you so much for your time. Maybe we'll talk to you again next year when you get a couple of other guys that come to Dallas.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on. You guys stay safe.
All right. If you thought this show was jam-packed, tune in for our next one. Bobby and I, when we started our podcast, said, what would be our dream guest? And we both unanimously said, one of our favorite Cowboys players, T.O.
Terrell Owens.
We are going to dedicate an entire podcast to T.O. because we know that there's just that much ground to cover with him. So you want to tune into that one. That one drops for you next week.